Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 4th day of April, Anno Domini 2026, and you? You lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are going to be bringing you news, views, things that you have nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Oh, before we hear the news, happy Easter to those who celebrate, happy Passover to those who celebrate, and of course, today is not just Holy Saturday, but is also the feast day of Saint Isidore of Seville, the patron saint of computer users and of the internet.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Our own holy day.
Our own holy day. All right, starting...
Dingus Day on Monday.
Dingus Day is Monday. Starting this week, Microsoft has begun force upgrading unmanaged devices running Windows 11 24 H2 Home and Pro Editions to Windows 11 25 H2. That's you, by the way. According to Microsoft's lifecycle policy, Windows 11 24 H2 will reach end of support in roughly 6 months on October 13th of 2026. Windows 11 25 H2 began rolling out in September to eligible Windows 10 or 11 devices as a minor update installed through enablement packages. On Monday, Microsoft said the machine learning based intelligent rollout, has expanded to all devices running Home and Pro editions of Windows 11 24 H2 that are not managed by IT departments. That, by the way, means you. Microsoft added devices running these editions will no longer receive fixes for known issues, time zone updates, technical support, or monthly security and preview updates containing protections from the latest security threats. These devices will automatically receive the update to Windows 11 25 H2 when they're ready. No action is required, and you can choose when to restart your device or postpone the update. If you're not ready to upgrade, you can postpone updates from Settings, Windows Update by selecting the amount of time you'd like to pause them. However, you must install the latest updates after the time limit has passed. Now, I want you to pay attention to that last part. I'm not done with the news, but pay attention to that last part. If you don't do this update, you will no longer receive fixes for known issues, time zone updates, technical support, or monthly security and preview updates containing protections from the latest security threats. If you don't update, you are screwed. That's done. You're done.
Problem is, if you do update, you're often screwed.
Well, exactly right. Since the March 2026 Patch Tuesday updates were released, Microsoft has issued several emergency updates, including one that addresses a known issue breaking sign-ins with Microsoft accounts across multiple Microsoft apps, such as Teams and OneDrive. It also pushed out-of-band updates for Hot Patch enables Windows 11 Enterprise devices that fix the Bluetooth device visibility issue and security vulnerabilities in the routing and remote access service management tool. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Microsoft will force upgrade to Windows 11 25 H2. Your choices are wonderful, okay, I guess, I'm emotionally unprepared, and win what now? So far, we have 29 votes. Shockingly, win what now is about half of them. And, of course, you can vote in the poll. It's real easy to do. Just head on over to soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And, of course, once you've done that, if you have a question for us on pretty much dang near anything, give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. I love how they're strong-arming us. If you don't upgrade, you are left in the dust. No more updates, no more fixes, no more nothing for you. Right, their way of the highway. And so this update is mandatory. They are forcing you to get it. whether you want it or not, too bad. It's not your computer, remember. It belongs to Microsoft. You just get to use it.
Well, no, let's clarify it. It is your computer, it's just not your operating system.
Well, that's true. That's exactly right.
You own the computer, you just don't own the operating system.
Right.
So they will tell you how that operating system will work, how it will function, and what you will do with it.
Yep.
Right. So, yeah, be prepared. You are going to get that update, and it is pausable, but not avoidable. So, you know, you can pause it up to, I think, 60 days, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember.
Yep.
But, yeah, so, but you will get it. You will get it. And, of course, the longer you pause it, the more vulnerable you are because you're not getting any of the other updates, including patches to things like Microsoft Defender. So, you know, you become more and more vulnerable the longer you wait. And before we get to the phones, I think we would be remiss if we did not talk about tech support on the Artemis II mission.
Yeah, that was a good one. That they're having trouble with their Outlook, kept crashing.
Their Outlook would not work. They got what happened was Microsoft sent them two separate applications, both named Outlook.
And then there's the website named Outlook, and there's the service named Outlook.
Right.
They don't know what Outlook is either.
Right. Nobody knows what Outlook is, and so consequently. Whichever one they tried, neither one worked.
Right.
So they had to call tech support from 30,000 miles away.
Yeah.
Maybe the longest tech support call ever.
Shooting for the moon,
so to speak.
Can I get tech support up here, please?
Yeah, right.
But I guess one of the astronauts, in an off-the-cuff comment, said, well, then go to my Google account.
Yeah, just send it to my Google account. Yeah, yeah.
That
which
doesn't
I'm sure
crash.
Made Microsoft very happy. it was, and of course, this was on the PCD, the personal computing device. They're actually specialized laptops that they bring to do not only mission stuff, but their own personal stuff.
Yeah, somebody was able to, from the logo or whatever, they're pretty sure it's a Microsoft Surface Pro.
Yeah, probably. But Microsoft is deeply embedded in the government, so yeah, it's probably true. But sadly, the feed cut out before we heard whether or not the tech support guy said, did you try turning it off and on again?
Do a three-finger salute.
Right. So we don't know. We know it got fixed. We don't know quite how they did that. But they apparently remoted in with about a second and a half lag. To the PCD.
That's got to be an awful darn expensive tech, you know.
Yeah, if you were paying for that tech call.
Service call, yeah.
So, Steve, I can imagine that you now can say to the people who complain about your service call prices, at least we're on the same planet.
Yeah. Try catching somebody going to the moon and back.
Yeah, right. But, yeah, so that was just, you know, Microsoft. Fumble figured something else again, and this time it hit the space station.
And apparently one of the astronauts typed his PIN in on live camera.
Yeah. That certainly couldn't have hurt anyone.
I hope they're clean. Well, yeah, clean devices. Because the before launch, and we've seen it in launch, there's iPhone 17 Pros also there that they're taking pictures with. But there were stories about NASA was going to let the astronauts take their own phones up. I don't know about that. Maybe a brand new clean phone.
Yeah.
You don't want malware on your phone to get into the rest of the systems.
Right. So, yeah. Well, you know, our devices are ubiquitous now. And so it's understandable. People want their phones. They want their computers.
Yeah.
But there are, you know, there should be some small rules somewhere along the line about that.
Yeah, well, their main concern was, you know, they're going to be in that capsule for 10 days. And, you know, granted, they've got different experiments and all that, but there are, you know, quite cramped quarters for four people to be in moving around for 10 days.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's not like they got to do a lot of steering and all this other stuff. Once they set the trajectory to go, they just go. They don't do a lot of steering.
Yeah, it's pretty much, you know, They don't have. There's no steering wheel. They're not sitting there driving the thing.
Left turn, left turn, left turn,
left turn, left turn.
It's all up to Newton.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
They're following a free return trajectory.
But yeah, the problem of personal computing devices, which includes phones, has been around for a while because we have the same problem in the military.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do people bring their own phones to battlefield situations? And we've had people who did there was a famous one where a guy was on one of the battleships and he was running. Tracking app on.
Yep.
And it showed not only obviously the path he took around the ship, but it also showed where that ship was.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a good thing.
Yep.
When you're heading for a war zone.
Another good important thing about the spaceship is part of Rochester is up there too.
Yep.
Yep. The radios that they are using are from the Harris Corporation.
Yep. Yep.
They were developed here in Rochester. And, of course, you know, Harris does a lot of, well, the batteries and everything else for our combat soldiers and a lot of the other high-tech stuff that they use with radios and that is right here in Rochester due to the Harris Corp.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's called L3 Harris.
L3 Harris when they merged, yeah. The new Nancy Grace Roman telescope, majority of it was built here at Harris.
Yep.
And I think they just moved it to Huntsville for the shake test. They put it in a giant vacuum chamber and shake it and see what falls off and then fix it. They did that to James West and too many things fell off.
Yeah. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. What's up, Rich?
Hello, gentlemen, and happy Saints Day that you mentioned, and also happy Easter.
And the same to you.
I have a weird problem with my Google Sheets.
Okay.
And only on one machine, when I'm using my mouse and I go to scroll down, it scrolls down like 1,000 pages. A thousand rows or cells.
Right.
It doesn't just scroll down like 3. Now, it doesn't do it on any other machine I have or any other place that I use Google Sheets other than this one machine and an office upstairs in my house. I'm using Linux as the operating system for this machine, and I've tried it on other things like using Chrome OS. I've used it on a Windows 11 machine, yada, yada, yada.
Sure.
It's only on this one machine that I go to scroll down, and it goes down like 1,000 cells.
Yeah, all right, so there's a couple of things that'll do this. One is if you have your browser zoom set to more than 100%, that confuses Google Sheets when you're doing scrolling. It could be that you have, if in your mouse software, disable smooth scrolling.
But now, how do I do that where there's... the only software for that, it's a Logitech...
Yep.
Keyboard and mouse. But there's, I've checked the settings in Linux, but there is no other... I didn't install any other software to run those two things.
Yeah, but you can still turn off smooth scrolling in your version of Linux.
How about
smooth scrolling?
Scroll speed too.
Okay, I looked for that stuff, and I don't know. Everything seems to be okay there, but okay, I'll look again.
I'm seeing a lot of references to a program called IM Wheel.
IM Wheel is
yeah.
So that was going to be my next thing. If you need to, you can install a program called IM Wheel. I don't know what, I suppose.
Scroll wheel.
It's mouse wheel. I don't know what the IM stands for. But IM wheel. And that will let you change the scroll speed so you can lower it. Uh, um, So you can lower it, and that should solve the problem there.
Here's another caveat, though, to this. It only happens in Google Sheets. It doesn't do it any other time.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, the first thing to check is whether or not you have Zoom set to more than 100%.
Okay. I don't think so, but...
Yeah, check it in the browser. If it is, that should solve at least part of the problem.
Okay.
But the second thing is to reduce the sensitivity of the scroll wheel.
Okay. And I don't remember seeing any setting in Linux for that.
Yeah, it depends on what version of Linux you're running.
22.3, I think.
No, is it Debian or Ubuntu or...
Linux Mint. I downloaded it off of their website.
Oh, Mint. Okay, I'm not running Mint myself. But somewhere in Mouse, there should be... Yeah, so check the mouse and touchpad settings.
Okay.
Right, because you should be able to change...
Sensitivity.
The sensitivity and the acceleration.
Yeah, see, I know I've looked in there and haven't seen those specific things, but...
Well, also, again, is this on a laptop or a desktop?
It's a desktop, actually.
Okay. But, yeah, check it again.
Okay.
And you'll see whether or not there's both a sensitivity and an acceleration, and you might be able to change it there. Otherwise, the big thing is the Zoom.
The Zoom, okay. Because I like I said, it works fine on everything else. Everything else works like it's supposed to.
Right.
You know, it only scrolls down three lines, if you will, or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But just this specific
Somebody's
Google Facebook. Sheets program.
Right. Give that a try. Let us know.
Okay. Sounds
right.
Good. Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
Yep. You too. Thanks.
Bob.
Yeah, it's...
I've seen that with trackballs where you flick the ball and it keeps spinning if you're trying to get to row 1,000 or something like that.
Right, but yeah, you can scroll up and down using the scroll wheel, and that is a different sensitivity to the mouse movement.
Mm-hmm.
And IM wheel, probably in Intel mouse wheel or something, is the program that lets you set that sensitivity directly. Mostly, most systems don't need it, but if you need it, you install it and run it. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Doug. From Holly, New York. What's up, Doug?
Hi. Good morning, guys. I hope you're all doing well.
You too.
Yes. I have a question about an Apple computer. I guess this is mostly going to be directed to Steve. I'm running a 12-year-old Mac Mini.
Nice.
It does mostly what I want. It's an i7 dual core. It has 16 gig of RAM and a terabyte storage. I want to try to move up to a newer one, and I'm looking at M1, M2 Apple Minis.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest concern is when you look at prices on those, when you jump up from the standard 8 gig of RAM to 16 gig of RAM, it really increases, it shoots the price way up.
Well, they all come with 16 gigs of RAM standard now.
Well, the newer ones.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at kind of probably some refurbs, but am I going to notice, I mean, I do mostly basic email and web. I have a couple of video services, YouTube and things like that I use on the computer now. Am I going to notice or suffer if I go with an M1 or an M2 that only has 8 gig of RAM?
The biggest limitation is how many programs you can run at the same time. If you only do one or two at the same time, 8 should be fine.
Okay.
And how many tabs you have open.
And what right, and if you're using Chrome, don't open any more than two tabs.
Well, three or four, maybe.
Maybe three or four, yeah. Chrome tabs are notoriously memory hungry. Okay. So it might be better to use Firefox or Safari.
Right.
But that's something to keep track of. There's the activity monitor in utilities that will show you. In fact, you can do that now on your current computer. It will show you your memory pressure, how much memory you have, and how much it's actually using. So if, you know, say you've got 16 gigs of RAM now, but it only ever uses 5, then
8 is
fine, yeah.
Okay, so that's the activity monitor you said?
Yep, in the utilities folder.
Okay, one other concern I have is, again, from the cost perspective, going from pretty much the standard 256 gig of RAM to 512 or more, big price jump.
Right. So because everything is on a single chip, adding memory or storage to that single chip costs significantly more. So what we're seeing a lot of people do is you get the 256 stock model and then put everything on an external drive.
Right. Now, what would be the better way to connect that? I'm using about half of the terabyte I've got now, so I'd need a little more space for sure.
Well, Thunderbolt drives are fastest, but most expensive. USB 3 drives, probably okay, depending on what you put there. So things you don't use very often, maybe your music library you could put there, maybe your photos library, so that the external drive is going to be slower than the internal drive. And the fastest external drive you could get would be a Thunderbolt SSD, which is going to be the most expensive drive. In fact, external drives, actually, they're starting to come. The prices are starting to come down a little bit. There was one guy the other day that was complaining that all the RAM he had hoarded and bought it at huge prices, the RAM prices have dropped, and now he's screwed.
Too bad.
Yeah. So there's been wild fluctuations in memory and storage prices lately. But spinning hard drives haven't risen as much as SSDs have.
The memory I have, the storage I have in the Mini now is an SSD. Could I put that in an enclosure?
Sure.
All right. And that again, would be the better way would be what?
The fastest way would be Thunderbolt. The cheaper way would be USB.
Okay. And USB isn't... It depends on what you're doing with it. If it's just storing photos and storing your music and you're going to play your music from it and look at your photos from it, USB 3 would be fine.
Right. So make sure if you get it in the closure, it's USB 3.
Right.
Or 3.1, not USB 2.
Right. And as long as it's USB 3, you plug it into a USB. I don't think there are any USB 2 sockets on that.
Only on the Neo.
Yeah,
I'm
just thinking Neo.
We're not ready for that yet.
Yeah. So a USB 3 would be fast enough for daily use for those kinds of things.
Okay. All right. Thank you, guys. You've been very helpful.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Now, again, to be clear, it will be a little slower than your internal drive, but not so slow that it makes you crazy.
And you probably won't even notice it unless you run a benchmarking tool.
Right. Right. Right.
Okay. All right, thank you, guys.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. Yeah, the RAM prices are still, RAM and storage are still through the roof, all because of AI, and it doesn't really look like it's going to be alleviated anytime soon. So you're just going to pay more. Plus, getting things here is going to cost more because gas is going up, oil prices are rising. So it's there's not a lot of relief in sight. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites. You can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. We'll see you in just a couple of seconds.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
All choked up about it.
All choked up, yeah.
35 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Fred from Rochester, New York on the line. What's up, Fred?
Hey, same old, same old. This one problem I called you about before is still driving me crazy. I realized it was a short drive, but
yeah,
here I am.
More of a putt.
Fred, please turn down the radio.
I don't have a radio on.
I'm hearing...
Yeah, we're getting an echo from somewhere.
Yeah, we're getting...
It's all right, go ahead.
No, nothing. Nothing on my end.
You're not on speakerphone, are you?
I'm on a Bose system. Headphones.
All right, anyway, go ahead. What's your issue?
Okay, so I tried the method that you had suggested before. Didn't seem to help. So right now I went to the cd.local/share and then did the ls command. And it took me a minute to realize that those were columns of files or folders, not one line of more information.
Oh, yeah, add a dash al to get a single list. And not columns.
Dash L will give you a single, dash one will give you a single list.
Okay.
Different in BSD.
There is an impasse in that group of about 30-some. And when I go to either remove it or open it or anything, it says it doesn't exist. No such file or directory. When I try to change to it, when I try to remove it, either remove directory or remove the file, it says no such file or directory.
Are you typing it with a capital E?
Oh, didn't.
There you go.
Case matters.
Case matters in Linux.
Okay. That's probably okay. That's that. I did contact NPass support. And they didn't say anything about going into that directory, that folder. They said to go to the files program and look at in documents, and then a folder NPass, which there was one, and it said delete that folder, which I did. And trying to reinstall NPass from the website, which they gave me a link to, it said the following packages have unmet dependencies. NPass, dependence, and then it's got a lib, xcb, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, okay, so the problem there is,
okay,
in Linux, when you install a package from your package manager, it handles all the dependencies for you. So there may be multiple programs that need to be installed, and those are dependencies. Those are extra programs that the main program needs to run properly.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay,
the package manager handles all of that for you. When you do it by hand, you have to manage that all yourself.
Okay. So when I go to the package manager and I go to explore and I type in the search for NPass, it just sits there and got the wheel spinning.
I don't know. That sounds like an issue with your that sounds to me like an issue with your cache. And it, or with a connection to the system. Which version of Linux are you running again?
Ubuntu 2404.
2404. Yeah.
Cache would be where?
I had a problem yesterday on my old machine, which is still running 2404. It took forever to update. There was an issue with their repositories.
Yeah. That's what I'm seeing is when I search, if I search down below, if I just open it up and I look at the categories down below and I pick any category just to see what's happening, I get a I get blank rectangles.
Yeah, I don't at this point, I don't think that's you.
Okay. Well, that's refreshing, I guess.
Yeah. I don't think that's you. Again, I don't think we could put it up to vote. Yeah.
Where would I find the cash?
Generally speaking, if you go to the command line and do a sudo apt update, it refreshes the cache.
Okay. Yeah, I've done that a bunch of times.
Yeah. I know what some people do is they pick a different repository, and that changes the cache entirely.
How do I pick a different repository?
Here's a little cool thing. Under generally, it's under settings for your software and updates. You will find under Ubuntu software, which is one of the tabs, it says download from, and there's a drop-down list. If you go to that drop-down list, one of the choices is other. And if you pick other, you get a button that says select best server. And what that does is it goes out and tests a whole bunch of repositories and finds the fastest one for you.
Okay.
You then say okay, accept that, and then you close it out, and it'll come back and say, oh, the cache is all bad. We have to redo the cache. Should we do that now? You say yes. It takes a couple of minutes, but the new cache will then populate, and you should, A, get a slightly, only slightly, faster download and update system, but it will also refresh the cache for you.
Okay.
And if the one repository is having trouble, then it
finds a different one.
Finds a different one to work from.
Right.
Great. Okay. So in settings, run through that.
Under settings, it should be on most systems. Again, the wording may be a little different depending on what you're running.
Okay.
But it's essentially under software and updates.
Okay, I don't see that, but I got apps, and I want an account, I got appearance.
Is there a search?
Okay, you're in the...
Yeah.
Yeah, try searching for software or update.
Software and update should be under system, which will be farther down from where you are.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. System first and then software updates.
Right.
And then it's checking for updates. This computer is up to date.
No, you clicked on software updater.
This says software updates.
Is there another one that says software and updates or something like that?
Not that I'm seeing. As I searched like she said, just software, and it came up with system, and then software updates.
Okay, if you go to the settings,
and
you see all those things where at the top it says personal and about me and appearance and all of that.
Okay, let me go back again. Wi-Fi, network, Bluetooth, display, sound, power, appearance, Ubuntu desktop, apps, notification, and search.
What? Are you in the settings?
Settings, yes. Under the show apps and then go to settings.
No.
Settings wheel.
No. From the main drop-down menu, you go to...
Main drop-down menu.
The pop-up menu. What version of Linux are you running?
2404.
No.
Ubuntu 2404.
Ubuntu 2404. You should have in the upper left corner a menu.
Which front end? KDE, GNOME. Would that make a difference?
GNOME. Lower left is a show apps.
Lower left is a what?
Show apps.
Show apps.
No, that's not what we want. That okay. shows you only your apps. What we want is the big settings menu.
Open the GNOME Control Center. Search for settings.
Where's the GNOME Control Center?
That's where your settings are.
I don't see. I mean, I click on that. I've got four pages of the apps. That's the only place I see settings. There's a icon that says settings.
Is that there's the gear icon?
Yes.
And that's what you've been opening?
Yes. And there's no other. It just says settings. Now look at it, it says settings.
Okay, so if you hit the Windows key and search for software.
Windows key. Okay.
You should see either software and updates or just the word software.
Okay, software and updates. Perfect, okay.
Okay. Now, when you open software and updates...
God, I've never found that.
Hold on, I'm getting there myself. Hold on.
Okay, perfect.
When you open software and updates, you should see a window with a bunch of tabs across the top.
Yep.
The first one is Ubuntu software.
Yes.
About halfway down is a drop-down menu titled Download From.
Yes. Main server.
Yes.
Click Other.
Click that drop-down and select Other.
Okay.
Now you'll get a new window, and in the upper right of that window, it says Select Best Server.
Got it.
Click on that, and I'm not going to hold you on the line because that could take a couple of minutes.
Yeah, I see that right out the gate. It's going to be a minute.
Yeah, okay. That's going to find a different server for you. You say okay your way out of there, and at one point it will say Reload Cache. There's a button for Reload Cache. Let it do that.
Okay. Sweet. Okay.
All right, there you go.
Yeah, keep on keeping on, and thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
The NPAS customer service didn't have a clue on this part. So.
Yeah, well, all right. Thank you, Fred.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I always joke about when I call customer support for a company, I have to translate their Windows instructions to Mac.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How bad is it to get to the Linux instructions?
I will say this. I had to, from my previous employer, I had to change my password this week because it expires every year because I'm retired and I might be dead. So I have to redo it every year. So I called up and I said I have to reset my... I thought it reset in June, which is when I retired. For some reason this year, it reset last week. So I called, and they said, oh, yeah, we can do that. That's easy, blah, blah, blah. Here you go, here, go here, go here. I did it. He said, can you log in? I said, well, okay, I can log in, but hold on. So I've had this problem before. I can log into my place.
Yeah.
But can I log into email? So I logged into email. Of course, I could not log into email. So we spent about half an hour on that. And then he had to go get somebody else. And somewhere along the line, the guy said, okay, click on this and this. And I said, no, I'm on Linux. Oh, Linux.
Yeah.
I said,
one of those.
Just tell me where you want me to be and I'll find it. So he said, oh, I need this. And I said, okay, I'm there and blah, blah, blah. And it turns out the problem was at their end.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about 40 minutes, but they found it.
And then you found an email from a student asking for an extension on his paper?
from 12 years ago.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was...
wondering if he can get his grade changed.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So that, but I, you know, I do understand. He actually went and got somebody else who was a Linux guy. So, you know, he knew what he was, he knew what to do. And that's
like
the important
part. Any operating system, hell, any language that you learned for coding, there's different things you got to need to do to accomplish the same task.
Right. I've told this story before about a friend of mine who got a job programming C, and he'd never programmed in C in his life. And he came to me. Oh, yeah. He calls me up on a Friday afternoon. Says, do you know about this language C? I said, yeah, I do. Why? He said, well, I applied for a job, and I got the job, and I start Monday.
And he doesn't know C.
He doesn't know C. I said, Lou, I can't.
Mm.
I can loan you. I had the Kernighan and Ritchie C book, the white book.
Yep.
And I said, I can give you that, and I can give you my Borland. This is how long ago this was. Borland C.
Oh, yeah.
You could.
Yep.
Borland. Borland's.
Turbo C.
Turbo C. Borland had their copyright was, it's like a book.
Yep.
If I can loan it to you, but I have to take it off my machine to do that. And so I did. I took it off my machine, and I loaned him my copy of Borland C. And I said, but I can't come over till Sunday. He said, that's all right. I'll see what I can do. So I go over on Sunday. This guy has programmed all this amazing stuff. He's wonderful. He's farther ahead than I ever was with C. I said, Lou, I thought you said you don't know C. He said, Nick, computers only do one thing. This is just a different way to tell them how to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
God bless you that you think that way.
Do you get the syntax down? Does it want commas or periods? And
that's all it is. It's
brackets and everything else. How do you
make comments? The same thing under the hood.
Yeah.
Yep. And I told you also, I knew a guy who was working at the same place he was. I called him up about a week after he started. I said, do you know my friend such and so? He said, yeah. He's one of our best programmers. How long has he been programming in C? I said, you'd be surprised. But he's right.
It only came out in the 70s.
Right. They only do one thing.
Yeah.
And different languages are just different ways to tell it to do the same thing.
Well, it's like what I knew Turbo Pascal, you know, Pascal.
Oh, yeah. That was also a Borland product.
Yeah. And, you know, I had Turbo Pascal at home because I loaded that compiler so I could do it there. Because then once I compiled the program, I could upload it for my professor that he could run it.
Right.
But then when it came to PL1, you know, again, it's just learning, getting your head wrapped around the syntax and how it wanted things structured, you know, for a top-down programming.
Surprisingly, my college didn't accept the 7 computer languages I knew as of my foreign language requirement.
Is that, I think that's...
Really?
That's racist.
That is a foreign language, yeah. It never specified human language in the syllabus anywhere.
Hmm.
Right. But yeah.
Miss the day. No, I actually do to somewhat miss the days of programming and that. Because I remember at times I get up in the middle of the night because I had thought out of a routine that I had been thinking about at work. And all of a sudden it came to me, you know, in the middle of the night. Oh, got it.
Yep.
And I'm sitting out there and Lori'd sit there and say, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I had this.
It's in my head. Let me get it on paper before
it got to a point that she come out and she saw the light on. She go, don't stay up too late.
Yeah.
Well, because you know me.
I know you.
I get wrapped up into things and I'm there for our wake up calls.
I've told this story before.
Got light again.
When
oh,
I got him right. When I got him on Roadrunner instead of dial up, since it didn't cost you a mortgage payment any longer. I got him on Roadrunner, and he got on, and he was so ensconced in his computer, he forgot I was there. I was yelling at him, okay, I guess I'll go home now. Nothing.
Well, because my shop was right there at the switching station for the phone company.
Right.
I mean, if I had an issue, all I had to do is rap on the door, because the guys, matter of fact, came over a couple times. I knew a few of them, and they'd have, you know, ask me computer questions and all that. And if I ever needed anything, it was great. I'd sit there. And we had super fast service.
Sure.
There at what I was had the shop on Brighton Henry at Town Line Road. It was a great setup.
But I said, I'll call you in the morning.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He said, no, you don't have to. I'll go to bed in a little while. I said, okay. All right. So we went home. Next morning, I get a call from him. You son of a... I said, been up all night, huh? He said, yeah, I just got a wake-up call from my service. And I'm still sitting at the computer.
Two. They called me twice. Because there's the initial call, and then they call 15 minutes later, just in case you snooze.
Nice.
And I answered both of them.
Yes. Yeah.
That was all due to my beloved late wife, who, it was great because I was able to justify upgrading the modems.
Yep.
Back in the day.
Oh, sure.
I only had the 1200 baud modem, and she's standing in the doorway. We got a problem. I go, huh? What? Because I was writing some code. She goes, I know you're into the computers and that, and I support you 100%. But we got to do something about this phone bill. She goes, when the phone bill is more than the mortgage payment, we got a problem. I said, no problem. I'll get a faster modem. So yep. When I'm getting $4,800.
Well, what when Roadrunner first came to Rochester, it was heaven sent.
Oh yeah,
56K modem to 10 megabit. That was just ridiculous. But and so most of us already had second phone lines.
Yeah,
because right. Our wives wanted to be on the phone too. I don't know what that's about. So the cost of the second phone line plus the dial up service turned out to be about the same as Roadrunner service. So yep. It was easy to switch.
It was easy to switch.
Before I got my second phone line, I had rewired all the phones in my house so I could unplug them from my desk. So no one would pick up the phone.
Oh, and break the connection. That used to...
Kids these days won't recognize mom picking up the phone after a 17-hour Napster download and breaking the file.
Right, you're 99% of the way there.
Yeah, what's Napster? Why would it take 17 hours to download? Right.
You kids don't remember, but we used to have to sacrifice robots every time we wanted to get online. Yeah. Their dying cries haunt me to this day.
Yeah, I'll never forget that. We wound up, I was in the middle of uploading code, and because I had to get it in for my grade.
Yes, sure.
And Lori accidentally picked up the phone. She, oh, I'm sorry. And,
too late now.
Had to turn around and start all over again. And
I mean, picture-perfect Chamber of Commerce. Oh, I got too many audios running. I was sacrificing my robot.
Yep.
Yeah.
The dying screams haunt me to this day.
Yep.
That's my ringtone now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Especially when I got that real low pitch at the end. You know, all right, the high-speed connection.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, great. 10 hours of dial-up internet sounds.
Nice! I used to work with a guy who had perfect pitch, and when he got... We used to get calls for, because we were the computer center, so we used to get calls for the Monroe Community College Computer Center or the RIT Computer Center,
yep.
And he'd pick up the phone and he'd get the tone, and he'd whistle back in the correct response tone.
Yeah, and it would make the connection.
And make a connection, yeah. And then just put the phone down.
Yep. So, kind of like the fax machines.
Yeah,
someone
exactly.
Dials a false fax.
I still get a fax call once in a while.
Yep.
I don't know why. All right. That music tells us the first hour of this show is done, but do not despair. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming your way. That's right. A whole nother hour of sound bites with a whole nother hour of Dave Enright, a whole nother hour of Steve Ray, a whole nother hour of me, Nick Francesco, and a whole nother hour of you, but only if you give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 800-790-0415. We are going to take a slightly longer break, so feel free to take a bio break, get yourself a snack and a beverage, either adult or kiddie, And but don't go too far, because we're going to come right back with a whole lot more sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Computer talk you can understand. More sound bites is next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester.
A public service of the Greece Central School District.
Jazz 90.1.
On Facebook at Jazz 901 FM.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, you're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Microsoft, I'll read the Microsoft news now. Microsoft had a few issues this week.
Only a few?
Not including the, we'll talk about that as well. Microsoft had a few issues this week. It started with the latest preview update failing to install. Microsoft did not disclose the exact nature of the problem, although the message shown to affected users said, "Some update files are missing or have problems. We'll try to download the update again later." To prevent additional impact while the issue is investigated, Microsoft has temporarily limited the availability of this update. For those of you unfamiliar with preview updates, Microsoft says these production quality updates are released ahead of the planned security update release for the following month. Apparently, production quality means something different to Microsoft than it does to the rest of us. Their solution is yet another out-of-band update. It is less than 2 weeks since the last out-of-band patch for a Microsoft account sign-in problem introduced in the March update. These supposedly rare and unusual out-of-band updates seem to be the norm these days for Microsoft. Microsoft has resolved a known issue that rendered the classic Outlook email client unusable for users who enable the Microsoft Teams meeting add-in. The bug was first reported almost a month ago on March 12th, when affected Microsoft 365 customers began experiencing Outlook crashes and prompts to start it in safe mode. On Monday, Microsoft said the bug had been resolved and that a fix is rolling out. Apparently, it had not reached the Artemis mission. Microsoft advised affected users to update their classic Outlook client to the latest build, which addresses the issue. Notice they didn't say it solves it, just that it addresses it. Speaking of which, there's also a known issue that prevents some classic Outlook users from sending emails via Outlook.com. Affected users are being warned that their message hasn't reached some intended recipients. Microsoft recommends removing the M365 account address book, the account from address book, so that Outlook client doesn't check it when sending emails, hiding the Outlook.com contact from the Microsoft 365 account global address list. Other alternatives include creating a new classic Outlook profile that includes only the account receiving NDR errors, not deliverable, and using the new Outlook client or Outlook.com on the web to send email from the affected account. In other words, what they're saying is, we don't know what's wrong with our product. Use a different version of our product. Over the last 2 weeks, Microsoft fixed two other known issues, including one that caused classic Outlook to crash when enabling the Teams meeting add-in, and another triggered errors when synchronizing Gmail and Yahoo accounts. Even Microsoft knows Copilot shouldn't be trusted with anything important. Microsoft's terms of service, their own terms of service, terms of use for Copilot include this gem, and I quote, "Copilot is for entertainment purposes only. It can make mistakes, and it may not work as intended. Don't rely on Copilot for important advice. use Copilot at your own risk, end quote.
That's how the psychic lines stayed alive for so long. It's entertainment only.
Microsoft plans to build 100% native apps for Windows 11 and launch an initiative centered on a new team focused on native experiences instead of web-based wrappers. People have been complaining, rightfully so, on how slow, laggy, and unresponsive web apps are, and even Microsoft is now getting the message. We may be slow, but we are responsive, so you can give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Or toll-free at 800-790-0415. Microsoft, people are using the term micro-slop for Microsoft these days.
And they hate that.
So we are going to continue using it until they fix the problems.
Hey, it is what it is.
Well, most of it is caused by AI.
Yeah.
They've handed over much of the keys of the kingdom to AI, and AI is just not good at it. I don't care what anybody, I know there are people who love AI, who do everything in AI and they swear by it, it's their new religion. AI is crap for many, many things. And Microsoft is finding that out. All of the stuff that they have given over to AI, they now have to hire back programmers to do again.
It's like they've AI'd themselves into a corner.
Yeah, exactly right.
They have grown so much, and Windows and Microsoft products are so ingrained in society that they keep trying to add new features, and there's just so much code there. One little thing breaks 27 other things.
And the problem is that code has been put together by 35 different teams who don't talk to each other.
Over the last 50 years.
Some of those programmers are dead.
Yeah.
And so when they try to add something or change something or fix something, there are unintended consequences all over the code and in other code that connects to that code.
Today is Microsoft's birthday.
Yes, it is.
April 4th, 1975.
Yes, it is. Microsoft started in 1975. And so they're
in Albuquerque.
Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Albuquerque.
No, the San Francisco tree. well, that's what it sounded like you were singing.
I know. Yeah, there's an Albuquerque song, too. I'll never remember it again.
But, yeah, so...
As long as you take a left turn there.
Right. but, yeah, so the thing really is that AI is good for a lot of things, particularly small bits of code. But when you hand it gigantic projects like Outlook, it screws up, and part of it is you have to give it, if they could figure out a way to give AI the entirety of all of Microsoft's code and say, make all this work together seamlessly, maybe they'd have something. I cannot imagine how big that server would have to be, those servers.
Nope.
Would have to be.
And how long it would take it.
Well, exactly. But they may be doing it right now. Who knows?
But there's so much code and intertwined.
And there's legacy code.
Nightmare.
Look, anybody who's programmed anything ever knows if they go back to code they wrote last week, they look at it and think, what the hell?
Yeah, was I on good drugs that night?
Imagine something that was written 40 years ago, like the NT kernel, which is still being used inside Windows today, and it was written by somebody in a programming language that we don't use anymore, using tools that don't exist anymore, by a guy who is at the very least retired, if he's even still alive.
Yep. Well,
estimated 100 million lines of code.
Yeah,
but that's back when they took time and care into their coding.
Yep.
And it was just like, if you go back to all the different versions of Windows, by far, besides 10, Windows 7. Windows 7 was the most stable.
Right.
They only came out with one patch.
Right.
The others all had Service Pack 1, Service Pack 2, Service Pack 3. No. 7 only came out with one minor, and they didn't even say it was a service pack. It was just a patch that fixed a couple things. Otherwise, that operating system had some good programmers on it that it was bulletproof.
Well, and they tested and tested and tested, and that's and they don't do that anymore. We're the testers.
We're going to ship this date if it's done or not.
Move fast and break things.
Yeah.
That's the way they do stuff now. And that's a problem. And that's, you know, I get it. That's the new vibe and vibe coding and everything else. So I get it. I don't, it's just nuts. You have to understand that AI isn't doing the job. And Microsoft just keeps going all in on AI. AI is cheaper than people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Also, it's not as good as people.
I can't tell with you guys talking.
Yeah, I get it. All right.
Is it made of people?
What?
Is it made of people? No, that's the problem.
Right. That's Soylent Green. That's a whole different thing. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Brian. Brian, where are you calling from?
Pavilion,
New York. What's up?
Yes, the gateway to the luscious southern tier.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. I called to sing the praises of Linux. I know you guys don't like Linux much.
Yeah, it's Linux, yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I had an ancient Think Center in my garage. In fact, didn't even have a case on it. The thing just was just frozen and overheated and just wrecked, and it lasted for like 12 years or so, and I bought it secondhand from Tiger Direct. So
that's going back.
Who didn't love Tiger Direct, right?
Yeah, and that's and I bought it a long time, and I don't have an affinity for machines at all, but I was kind of sad that she passed.
Sure,
I was running Mint on it, and just on a whim, I had an archive of junk computers up in my closet. I pulled one out. Plunked it down. It was a Dell. It is a Dell. And just on a whim, without any fanfare or anything, I plugged the drives out of the ThinkCenter into the Dell, and it just came right to life.
Yeah,
I just didn't even flinch. You ain't doing that with Windows or Dell, period.
No, you sure aren't. You sure aren't. I'll tell you what. First, the ThinkCenters were amazing computers.
This thing was a monster truck.
Yeah.
That crushed monster trucks. I was so impressed with how... And it must have sat in a cube for a bunch of years too, because they had a ton of them for sale and they were cheap.
Yeah, well, and I don't know why, because like you said, they were amazing devices. Lenovo still makes great computers. I'm running a ThinkCenter today. That's my main machine, an M90T, and it's a great, great machine.
I do have one Windows machine that's a ThinkPad. It's very nice.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I have an old Dell of my own, a Latitude, I forget the 58 something, I don't remember. That was running Windows, and it was slow, and the battery didn't last, nothing. Stuck Ubuntu on it, XFCE, and I booted it up, and I charged the battery, and I unplugged the battery, and I looked at it, and it said 5 hours and 50 minutes. On this 15-year-old laptop.
Oh, I know.
And I thought, that can't be right. So I let it run, and I was working. I was, you know, I wasn't playing games or watching videos, but I was reading email and surfing the web and looking at a couple of YouTube videos and, you know, a standard day's worth of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And doggone if that battery didn't last almost 6 hours. I was shocked.
Shock. Well, you know, it's also not spying on you. Like, you know, right. Microsoft is always phoning the mothership.
Right.
Or were you running a Linux?
Yeah, I was running Linux.
Okay.
And all it was doing was what I was asking it to do.
Right.
And nothing in the background.
All that crazy telemetry.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Last time I tried to put a buddy of mine was a tech support guy, and he had like a universal sort of installation. I think it was NT or something like that. And a friend of mine stole this program and put it in the machine. And man, the Dell would not accept it. I ended up having to go to a HP or something like that. Dell just refused to do anything that didn't come with that machine.
Nice, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of machines were like that. They, you know, particularly from companies that either the military or an organization that truly took security seriously, they would lock machines down real tight.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I just want to pass it on to you guys. So anyway, you're out in, you know, listening today too. It's like, you know, if you something breaks, you know, don't hesitate to pull the drive on. Just pop it into something else. You know,
right.
Linux, it's just like a crescent wrench. It's so universal. It just works no matter what you do to it.
That's exactly right. It may need an update, but it'll run.
Actually, it did go out once I got it up and running. At first, I thought I had a problem. I didn't quite get the monitor cable on just right. I was kind of going, oh, boy, it's not booting. And I started, oh.
Yeah, that moment of panic where you push the button and nothing looks like it happened. What did it do wrong?
Right, so I went to go, okay, let's tear it apart. Luckily, I left it on, and I happened to bump it. Oh, a little flicker. Oh, there we go. All right. It is there. So right. I guess it does pay to check if things are plugged in, right?
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why we don't do that. Yeah. All right, thanks, Brian.
Take care. Happy Easter, you guys.
Happy Easter to you, too. Thanks. Yeah. I have resurrected a lot of machines with Linux on them. Also with very old and very slow and very low-end machines, Chrome OS Flex, which is really just another version of Linux.
Yeah, it doesn't need much.
And it is now Chrome OS Flex. Originally, you know, Chrome OS runs on Chromebooks, and there was a company that essentially recreated Chrome OS, called it Chrome OS Flex, for other low-end old machines, and then sold it to Google, and now it is a legitimate Google product. Chrome OS Flex is a legit Google product, and they're putting it on. They're making it available for more and more machines. And somewhere in our link list, we've got a list of all the machines that it is compatible with at this point.
They just apparently released a $3 flash drive that comes with the installer.
There's a company called Back Something that released the $3 flash drive. So you don't even have to download it and create the flash drive yourself anymore. You can spend $3 and get a 16-gig flash drive, which I don't know where you can get a 16-gig flash drive for $3 these days.
Yeah.
You get a 16-gig flash drive for $3 with Chrome OS Flex on it.
Postage, too.
Right. And just you just plug it in and follow the bouncing prompts, and your old machine is now a Chromebox.
Currently out of stock.
Yeah, it's currently out of stock. I actually have that. I had that as one of our... there it is. I don't have the company name on here. Yes, I do. Backmarket.com.
When I first started seeing ads for that, I read it too fast and thought it was Black Market.
Yeah, so did I.
Oh, that's pretty cool. The Black Market is now advertising?
Yeah. Yes.
The Deep Web is going to start advertising?
Yeah. Very cool. And the Pirate Bay is going to start. Yeah, they're gone anyway now. So Black Market is doing that. And if you've got an old machine that's old and slow and weak and yada, 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 check to see if it's compatible with the Chrome OS Flex and give it some new life. There's nothing that makes me angrier these days than all the e-waste. Apple did it with, you know, throw away all your Intel boxes. It's M1 now. And Google and Microsoft is doing it with throw away all your Windows 10 machines. It's Windows 11 now, and that makes me angry. Those machines still have a lot of life in them. I've said that before. This machine was a Windows 8 machine back in the day, Core i5, 2015 it was, I think, maybe 2017. So it's, you know, 10 years old anyway. These machines still have a life, and they can still be completely useful. Again, it depends on what you do. Yes, if you're somebody who absolutely needs some program that was only ever written for Windows, then I'm not talking to you. But for everybody else on the planet,
he spelt the town that he's from, but I couldn't get it.
All right,
and it's likely there's an equivalent for Linux, not your specific program, but there's probably something that does the same thing.
Right, there's an alternative to .NET. We'll often tell you what those are. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Joel. Where are you calling from, Joel?
Jenkintown, Pennsylvania, just north of Philadelphia.
Jenkintown?
Jenkintown, formerly of Pittsburgh.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Calling to thank you guys for a neighbor. One of my neighbors, his computer died. and he decided that it must have been the power supply. So he went and put in a new power supply, and of course it still didn't work.
Right.
And after that, he contacted me. He had pulled the hard drive out. He said, what do we do? So I said, bring the hard drive over. And then I popped it into a dock, and fortunately, the hard drive was running. So after changing the permissions on his user folder, I was able to move all of his user files onto my portable drive.
Nice.
Then the story gets interesting, because then we go back to his place, and he's got a new computer that was given to him by the company he used to work for, and we turn it on, and it is popping up virus warnings from the notification area, just a continuing series of virus warnings. So I'm not going to pop my portable drive into his computer.
Right.
It's popping virus warnings. So I say, do you have antivirus software? Yeah, I had McAfee on my old computer. Okay, we put McAfee on his computer, run it, finds nothing. Warnings are still popping up. We run a Windows Defender, finds no warnings, pop-ups are still popping up. So I'm thinking about, you guys have been touting Malwarebytes and Super Anti-Spyware for years.
Yep.
So you know, let's try Malwarebytes.
Yep.
Malwarebytes finds something, it quarantines it, we restart the computer, and everything is good.
Yep, a fake virus warning. Yeah.
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 Not caused by a virus.
Thank you all for telling. I had never personally had to use either Malwarebytes or Super Anti-Spyware to fix an issue, but it sure came in handy last week. So thanks again, guys.
Well, thank you.
And all you do.
Now you need to get your neighbor listening to Soundbites.
Yeah.
We do have a pledge drive coming up.
And the pledge drive starts next week, so they can show their gratitude.
And the other thing I did, I talked to them long and hard about backups, because there were no backups for that hard drive.
It's the thing you got to preach to everybody.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We need a bat with the word backup.
A clue bat. Mm-hmm.
The clue bat.
Yeah.
The backup clue bat. All right, thanks, Joel. Great story. Thank you.
Greetings to you all in Rochester.
And have fun back down there in PA.
Thank you. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, I like to hear that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Malwarebytes is a heck of a program, you know.
But to his friend, though, that is something you should be running, both the Super Anti-Spyware and Malwarebytes, all the time.
Yep.
Because you still need an antivirus program. Don't get us wrong. We have not said do away with that. What we have said is because the people have shifted, the viruses are still out there, so they could be hiding. But the other thing they're switching to now is malware and spyware. That's where you'll get a lot of emails and all that I didn't sign up for that. And fake stuff that all of a sudden, like that gentleman was getting, these fake warnings that you've got a virus.
Yep.
It happened to, matter of fact, my wife's machine just last week. She called me and said, it says I got this. I says, you know what to do. She says, okay.
Yeah. It's easier to write a message saying you have a virus than it is to actually write the virus.
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, it throws the fear of God in there, and they throw up a phone number.
And you call it and get money.
Yeah.
But this also points out why you need something like Malwarebytes, because antivirus programs are great to kill viruses, but they don't kill other types of malware. You need both. And now, you know, back in the day, I grant you, if you're still running that 15 or 20-year-old computer, it may be so slow that running both an antivirus program and Malwarebytes is going to slow it down significantly. These days, a machine won't even notice they're both running.
Yeah.
So run them both.
Yeah. And, you know, because that's where they're making their money. Before, when they wrote viruses, they didn't really make any money. All they were able to do was take down a network or sit there and laugh. Oh, hey, I crashed all these computers and this type of...
Right, that was ego boo back then. Yeah.
Now, what they do is steal your information, say like your emails and everything else, that they can sell to other people that, you know, hey, I've got 15 million email addresses here that you can spoof people with your product or this or that. So they're making money that way.
Right.
Yeah, why do I keep getting junk mail? Because someone bought your email list, your address on a list.
Right. I got an email from myself the other day.
Did you respond to it?
Check your system administrator.
I get that a lot. Check your system. I am my systems administrator. But, yeah, I got an email message from myself. I talk to myself all the time, but not by email.
Really?
Yeah.
You should, double
check. Someday I'll get an intelligent answer out of me. It hasn't happened yet.
And don't keep hoping for it.
Right.
I gave up a while ago on that one. It's like, that's a foregone conclusion. Yeah.
But that's another reason I really love Gmail. Gmail is very good at blocking out spam. The filters are amazing.
Yeah, they say they block like 2 billion spam messages a day.
A day. Mm-hmm.
And frustrating when you still get 10 or 20 a day yourself.
Yep. But, I have a couple of addresses that aren't Gmail. They are full of spam. And I mean 15, 20 an hour. They just keep coming because they're all being sent by bots.
Yep.
You know? I do love Gmail. I do love Gmail. I can't deny that. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break, but don't go too far because we'll be back. And in fact, you should be listening diligently to what's going to be said during the break because we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and with you. It is 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And 34 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I believe I can read more news.
Yeah.
If you're someone who's highly invested in Google products and services, there's a pretty good chance you're using Google Drive. Being able to store your data in the cloud can be a lifesaver, even if you're just using the 15 gig that comes included for free with every Google account. Google said its ransomware detection and file restoration are now rolling out to all users, bringing a new level of protection to Google Drive. As soon as there is ransomware detected, Google Drive will automatically pause syncing in order to prevent the bad file from spreading to other devices. Nice. Isn't that nice? Users will be notified about the file, and emails will be sent out to connected users if needed. The warning is quite bold, so you're unlikely to miss it. Apple introduced over a dozen new products this month, not including new cases and watch straps. As a balance, they also discontinued just under a dozen old products. Each of these products' discontinuations is a straightforward instance of something old being replaced by something new. But Apple also discontinued a couple of products that are not being replaced directly, like the Pro Display XDR, the Mac Pro, and the highest RAM configuration Studio. On Thursday, Google released security updates for its Chrome web browser to address 21 vulnerabilities, including a zero-day flaw that it said had been exploited in the wild. As is customary for these alerts, Google did not provide any real details on how the vulnerability is being exploited and who may be behind the effort. This is typically done so as to ensure that a majority of users are updated with a fix and prevent other actors from joining the exploitation bandwagon. So make sure your Google Chrome browser is up to date. Apple has introduced a security feature in macOS Tahoe 26.4 that blocks pasting and executing potentially harmful commands in Terminal. Wait, Mac people use Terminal? And alerts users to possible risks. The new mechanism appears to be aimed primarily at blocking quick fix attacks. The quick fix is a social engineering technique that tricks users into pasting malicious commands into the command line interface under the pretense of fixing a problem or a verification process. This fix delays executing a potentially malicious command in Terminal when the user pastes it and shows a warning about associated risks. Google is now widely rolling out transit mode to turn on helpful settings while you're on the train and real-time commute updates and at a glance. The ability to control notification filters, people, apps, and alarms, and display settings matches other modes. What's unique with Transit is how it can turn on automatically. And Chrome OS Flex, which we actually already talked about, is a lightweight operating system that's meant to be outdated, underpowered, and laggy Intel-based computers feel snappy again. It replaces the resource-heavy Windows or Mac OS with the cloud-based prowess of Chrome OS. Up until now, the primary way to download and install Chrome OS Flex has been through Google's official website, though Google wants to make that process even easier. So there's a new Chrome OS Flex USB kit. This preloaded USB key updates your computer with Chrome OS Flex, and it only costs $3. Of course, we're still available free, thanks to your generous donations. So give us a call at 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299, and toll free at 800-790-0415. And as we said in the last segment, that device is currently sold out, but I'm sure it'll be back soon.
Is it downloadable?
It's downloadable directly. No. This is strictly, you can still download it and create a USB key yourself.
Yeah.
But for people who aren't that tech savvy, which is really the market for Chrome OS Flex, for $3 you can buy the USB key.
That is turd cheap.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And so that's listed. Steve has put the link up on the latest links here on the show on our home site at soundbites.org, bites with a Y. And like we said, currently it's out of stock as of this moment, but I'm sure it'll be back in stock pretty quickly. And all you have to do is send them $3. They send you the USB key. You stick it in a computer and
it'll boot.
But you should check to see. And somewhere in the link list is a list of the compatible
machines
to Chrome OS Flex. And they're adding ones all the time, so it's a... You know, if you've looked at the list before and not seen your old machine, it may be on there.
Well,
now.
See, and this is the prime thing right now. I mean, with people being forced, literally being forced to get other machines that'll run Windows 11, and now all of a sudden they got this other box sitting there.
Yep.
You know, it's the perfect opportunity that you can get yourself what they call an AB switch. That you can hook up one keyboard, one mouse, and the monitor to two computers. You then get this device for $3, put it on that the old machine to run Linux and learn it now. Because like Nick has said, down the road, you're going to pay for the subscription of Windows. And they're, you know, mucking up stuff more and more. It's the perfect opportunity with the different flavors of Linux out there that you can get a machine to look just like your Windows environment or your Mac. And since it's an AB switch, all you're doing is hitting one button and you're switching the monitor from one box to the other. So it's not like you got to get down there and crawl around and unhook this and hook up that. The AB switches are maybe $15-$20 max.
Yeah. They're also called KVM switches for keyboard, video, mouse.
Yep.
So if you're looking up, you can look up AB switch or KVM switch, keyboard, video, mouse. I have one on my machine. My old desktop and my new desktop are both connected through a KVM switch. I hit one button. This is great because it comes with a little extended cable that's just got a button on the end. I hit that button, and it switches from my new machine to my old machine or back again, and I can do things on both machines without a problem.
And it gives you the time to practice on your and learn, watch other videos to be more proficient with Linux. It's really not that different, you know. excuse me, of an operating system that you can't really learn it because they have simplified it compared to the old days. As far as installing software and everything else, they got a repository of software that's mind-blowing. It could take you from now until Christmas to go through all the categories and all the different tens of thousands of software packages that are available to do just about anything that you want to do. That you're currently doing now with either a Mac or a PC.
And it's free.
Yeah.
All that stuff is free.
And the support is great.
Yeah. Now, again, if you're going to go to Linux, that's a full operating system with everything in it. If you're looking to go to Chrome OS Flex, it's a Chromebook. So it's really designed for email, web browsing, some, you know, YouTube video and like that. But it's not for people who do high-end stuff, want to play high-end games.
Yeah, that's for the folks that you hear call in here and say, well, I don't really do a lot with it. Email and maybe write a letter or that.
Right, and that's what it's for. And because it's Chrome OS Flex, if you've got a Gmail account, it uses that. In fact, you have to have a Gmail account.
Yeah.
But if you use Gmail and you use, say, Google Drive, you're 100% set up.
Yeah, you got 15 free gig.
You're done. You get 15 gig free. I would suggest that you if you've got an old machine that's sitting there, an old laptop, an old desktop, that you want to keep usable. I know a lot of people take a Chromebook or a Chrome OS Flex old laptop on vacation, mm-hmm. rather than risk their new machine getting broken or stolen or whatever. They take the old Chromebook or the old laptop running Chrome OS Flex, and all they're doing is email and browsing the web. So yes, absolutely right. Mm-hmm. Write a few letters, whatever you're doing. But mostly, you're just keeping in touch. You're staying on Facebook or whatever it is you're doing. And a Chromebook, the Chrome OS Flex system will absolutely do that. And so a lot of people do that. So they have I've got one downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if I'm downstairs watching a movie with my wife on the big TV. And I can't watch a movie anymore without using IMDb. I just can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I can pop open the Chromebook and see, who is that actor, what is it, whatever. and I don't have to, it doesn't have to be my main machine. It's an old laptop that I'm not doing anything else with. So why not?
Well, say, speaking of which, the Google Drives, I've got my Money Dance. And I've got it both on my computer downstairs, and I've got it on having the multiple Gmail accounts. My machine upstairs goes by a different email address, Google account. So I'm backing my Money Dance when I'm using it up there to a whole different drive, a Google Drive, than I do the one downstairs. So it doesn't matter. I kind of got it double backed up there, plus, my Raspberry Pis around the house. So I've got now 5 different copies.
Good.
Of my Money Dance. But I don't care. It's such a small space, but to me, it would be a major pain in the butt to recreate all that stuff that I've set up that, for the automatic stuff, reminders and everything that's happened between that and my NPass, I'm covered.
Yep. And NPass does the same thing. I back up NPass to my Google Drive. It is encrypted on my computer to my lengthy password. And then that encrypted file is saved up to Google Drive, which means I can get exactly the same file on my desktop, my laptop, my watch, my phone, anywhere I want it. And anything I add or change or save is immediately available on all the other machines. And that's because I can do it through my Google Drive safely because it's encrypted on my devices, not on Google Drive.
Oh, speaking of which, Money Dance, for close to, 3 years now, I have been trying to talk my wife into doing a program on the computer to do it. She was the old fashioned, no, I got to register. I write everything down, stuff the receipts in there and everything else. Well, kind of got out of control once you get grandkids.
Oh, yeah.
Misplaced a couple receipts.
That's all it takes.
And she spent a whole afternoon trying to track it down. I said, off your head. She goes, put it on.
Yep.
So I got her set up, and she's now in the midst of doing the, you know, creating the account and everything else and everything.
It's when you hit your pain point, whatever your pain point happens to be.
So, you know, it just, it makes it so simple. I told her, I says, all I got to do, and I'm very religious about it. Every morning I get up, I sign into my bank, I look at my deposit there, and I open up Money Dance. Just because things can happen. I had it happen on her credit card on Labor Day. Somebody got her card and had a field day.
Yeah,
and being on a long weekend, it took us then 3 weeks after that to straighten everything else, because they went to a hair salon and got their nails done and everything else and dinner. And, of course, you know, we got it all back, but keeping track of it, you know, by doing that and having it on the computer to know what's going on, it's a godsend to quick just, oh, yep, I'm good. Not worrying about a registry and something hitting and didn't. Because nowadays, you can go to a diner. By the time you get home, you can go log into your banking. It's already there.
Yep.
Post it.
Yep.
It's not these.
I'll be walking away from the register at Wegmans and my phone, ding, charge.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't take the 2-3 days like it used to in the old times.
Yeah, you can't kite a check anymore.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's there. So right. It makes it handy that, you know, you can get home and, oh, yeah, write that receipt in and boom, you're good to go.
Yep. It's easy and it's quick. And it can, as you said, it can be a lifesaver.
And it's only $65, one-time charge. Quicken has gotten to where now, talk about paid services. Now with Quicken, you've got to buy, you only rent the program.
Right.
And if you let the subscription run out, I think it was like 10 days, because I had it for a while, and then all of a sudden I discovered the Money Dance. After 10 days, they lock you out of your account. So you can't get into, they actually hold it, hijack it. So it's like, yeah, no. For the few bucks, you know, the one-time fee, $65, you pay it. And, you know, you've got their support. They're great as far as getting back to support. You ask them a question, boom, the following day I had an answer. And it's worldwide. So it's not just some local company. This is a worldwide product, and it'll run on all major operating systems.
Right. Now, what you can try it for free, and it gives you 100 transactions.
Yep.
Then it's $65 for a one-time purchase.
Yep.
But you can also do a Money Dance Plus.
Yep.
Which is syncing directly to your bank.
Yes.
And that's a separate subscription.
Yep. I don't bother doing that because I like...
Most people don't need it.
I like to just go in. It's not like I have a million transactions. If it was a business, I'd recommend the subscription.
Right, right, but, right, right. For a business, it yes. But for the individual, the $65, but which gives you this version you're on and the next version.
Yep.
But if you want the one after that, you pay again.
Yeah, and the pay again was only... I believe
40, it was $49, $49.99, $50.
Oh, they raised it because before it was only $35 for me.
Yeah,
of course, it was a while ago.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, but yeah. So it, you know, it's not a lot of money, and these days, in particular, in these parlous economic times, which I've been saying that phrase for too long. It's a kind of an essential thing to be able to keep track of your money.
Well, the main point that I was trying to get at, though, is these companies that, like Microsoft, that are going to paid subscription. This is something that's going to happen down the road. You know, hear me now, remember me later, because that's the way it's going. Quicken is already doing it.
Yep, a lot of companies are doing it, and a lot of companies are trying to figure out the best way to do it, too. Yeah.
And they're sitting there saying, you don't like it? Oh, well, then go somewhere else. Meanwhile, they've just jacked your account, you know, hijacked it, and you can't get at it.
And even if you're running, you know, standard Windows now, and you don't upgrade to the new version that's subscription only, your computer's going to die eventually, and then that will be the only thing left.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So going backwards, I know we've done a roundabout way of doing it, is take the time right now while you have that extra box and learn Linux. Whatever flavor you want, like we've told you before, you can get a bunch of jump drives. Don't have to be big ones, the flash drives. Load it up with the different flavors. You can put it in, and it'll boot from there and try it out. It'll be slow. Mark our words, you know, and don't, you know, oh, this is terrible. Yeah, it's going to be slow. But will it do what you want it to do? Because it will be a lot faster, and set it up the way you want it. That's the key thing. And there are hundreds of videos on the different flavors on how to set it up and what it can do, what it can't do. So even before you try it, you can also look into that. Just sitting, you know, in an afternoon watching these different YouTubes, say, on Cinnamon Linux or, you know, whichever flavor, and find out the different features and how to install stuff and how to change stuff so it fits your needs.
A lot of people are swearing by Linux Mint these days.
Yep.
There's three main flavors, Mate, XFCE, and Cinnamon. Most people are going to Cinnamon. I prefer XFCE simply because it's much lighter weight, much faster on old machines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reality is that no matter what operating system you're running, if you're using a graphical user interface, it can be heavy and slow. XFCE is still a graphical user interface, but it's lighter and faster.
That's why I use my Raspberry 300.
Right. Because there's not a lot of super fancy, you know, swish it in, swish it out, all that nonsense. And all the stuff you love.
Yeah. Graphical user interface means the icons you click on.
Yeah, exactly.
Remember when GUI was a big thing? And
well, you had to explain what a GUI was every time? Yeah. But yeah, so there's a lot that you can do with old machines. And again, e-waste makes me angry. There's absolutely no reason to throw out old machines. Look, if you don't want your old machine, get it to me. I'll refurb it and move it on to somebody who can use it. This whole nonsense of throwing away a perfectly good computer just because it can't run Windows 11, that's nonsense. And I don't care. If you're calling in, speak up.
And we're about done for this week, so this might be the last call that's going to make it.
Yeah.
Do that with Mighty Dance. But back to the Mac discontinuing products, Mac Pro. Officially discontinued. It was the super high end with slots.
Right.
So it was basically equivalent to the Mac Studio, but it had slots for people that needed it. And we always guessed there were so few people that needed it. Hollywood blockbuster special effects movies might need some. But it was made in the U.S., made in Texas.
Right.
So that was a big deal for Apple. But now they're making their own AI servers in Texas, and they're going to start making the Mac Mini in Texas.
Right. Yep.
So that as they move more of their production back to the U.S., as we start seeing more manufacturing plants open up again. You know, when I was in high school, it was go to college, get a good job so you won't have to work in a factory.
Right.
And so then all the factories left.
And exactly
now,
right.
And now we're starting to get factories back. You know, it's the FAFO problem.
Right.
So, as the factories build up, Apple announced that the Corning plant in Kentucky, I was hoping it would be the one here, but the Corning plant in Kentucky is making the glass for all their iPhones. So it used to be they never said who their vendors were.
Right.
But there's a vendor list on their website if you dug in close enough. But it just listed their names, not what they made. But now it's getting to be a big deal of parts made in the U.S. and what parts are and where it's assembled versus where it's made in the U.S. is becoming a nebulous thing.
Yeah, right.
Now. Yeah. So now it's assembled in the U.S.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. Matter of fact, we had to put some stickers on some products where I work, you know. Parts assembled here in the U.S.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, there isn't a single computer that's made in the U.S. because most of the parts are made overseas.
Yeah, they all are.
You can assemble it in the U.S., but you're not making many of the chips in the U.S.
Or the motherboards or...
Right, right, right. Even this Texas plant where the M1s are being made or whatever that is.
Yeah, there's a big Wall Street Journal article where there's four chip fabs and they're building four more. But it's 10 years and $10 billion to make a chip fab.
Right.
And by the time it's done...
Technology would be outdated.
Right, those chips aren't, you know, we had to start going to angstroms. Yeah, we had a 2 nanometer process, now we're down to 15 angstroms.
Right, but the reality is that, you know, even so, a lot of the support chips, many of the boards themselves are actually produced overseas. And even if you import all those parts and assemble them here... you know, you can call it made in the U.S., but it's not really made in the U.S. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, who stayed awake for much of the show. I want to thank Steve Ray, who once in a while looked up from the race to pay attention to what we're doing.
My guy came in fourth.
What?
My guy came in fourth.
Congratulations. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Great questions this week. We like the hard ones. We don't answer them sometimes well, but we like them. So that's important. And please, next week we'll be in the middle of our pledge drive. So please, take the time now to think about making a pledge. We would love to see a pledge from you next week. But we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?